So chapter 13, we are looking at Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogaha, in which Bhagavan started explaining first about what the Kshetra is. Idam Shariram Kaunteya Kshetramitya Bhiyate. This Shariram, this body, human body, is called Kshetram. And Kshetrajna is the Atma that is inside it. The soul, the consciousness property is called Kshetrajna. And the Jadam, that is the Shariram, is called Kshetra. And after that, he started talking about the Jnanam. What is Jnanam? What is Ajnanam? So in that definition of Jnanam, he enumerated so many qualities that come under Jnanam. And he said that everything else will be categorized as ajnanam, no matter what the information value of that other things are. So they may have a lot of information value, but they are all termed as ajnanam only. Only jnanam is what he has enumerated here, starting from this Amanitvam Adambhitvam Ahimsa Kshantirarjavam Acharyopasanam Shaucham Sthairyam Atmavinigraha, all the way until Shloka 11, Etad Jnanam Iti Proktam Ajnanam Yadato Anyatha. So after that, he started talking about a lot more about the consciousness principle, the soul. And Krishna started describing some of the properties of the soul. Bahirantascha bhutanam acharam charamevacha jyotisham apita jyotihi tamasa paramuchyate, all those things. Then in the last shloka that we talked about, shloka number 16, prakritim purusham jeva vidhyanadi ubhavati. They both are anadi only. Both are without beginning, prakriti and purusha. And the combination of the prakriti and purusha is what is going to give rise to the gunas, the three gunas. And the three gunas are what are responsible for this entire world. Then we will look at the rest of the shlokas. Karya karana kartritve hetu prakriti ruchyate purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktritve hetu ruchyate. So for this kartritvam and bhoktritvam, so in the group, in the Veda class group, we recently posted a message where the message talked about kartritvam and bhoktritvam. So kartritvam is the sense of doership. Bhoktritvam is the sense of enjoyership. So this sense of doership and enjoyership both come because of this prakriti, which is also called the maya shakti. And if one would like to cross this maya and realize Bhagavan's true nature, one should go beyond this karya karana kartritva and bhoktritva. So this kartritva and bhoktritva attitude one should cross. And this aspect Krishna already covered in Karma Yoga, which is chapter 3, and also the Karma Shakta, first 6 chapters. So he is just rehashing that here. So I'm not going to go through every shloka. Let us see. Ayam Veti Purusham Prakritim Chagunaisah. Let us look at this shloka. Shloka number 24. Dhyanen atmani pasyanti kechid atmanam atmana anye sankhyena yogena karma yogena chapare. Dhyanen atmani pasyanti kechid atmanam atmana. So he is now talking about a variety of sadhanas to achieve that Atma Jnanam, Atma Swarupam. So he is saying, some people do it through Dhyana Marga, Anye Sankhyena Yogena. Some people do it through Jnana Marga and Karma Yogena Chapare. Some other people try to do it through Karma Marga. So although Krishna, he seems like he is professing so many different paths, but eventually all those paths are going to lead to only jnana. All this jnana, karma yoga, bhakti, sankhya, all those things are going to lead to jnana only. That is why every there in Bhagavad Gita, he says jnanam is the only way to get moksha. But there are so many preliminary paths to get to a place before one can get atma jnanam, to get to the qualification. So that qualification, there are so many paths available depending on the adhikaritvam of the sadhaka in terms of what the sadhaka's qualification is. Either they can go for dhyana or karma yoga or bhakti, upasana, japa, mantra, all those things. Then अन्ये त्वेव मजानन्तः श्रुत्वान्येभ्य उपासते तेऽपि चातितरन्त्येव मृत्युं श्रुतिपरायणाः. सो अन्ये तु एवम् अजानन्तः. सो अन्ये तु एवम् अजानन्तः श्रुत्वान्येभ्य उपासते. श्रुत्वा अन्येभ्य उपासते. वाट् डस् दट् मीन्? श्रुत्वा अन्येभ्य उपासते. Krishna is saying here is, anyebhyaha, other people who are not able to do the sadhana themselves, that means who have not qualified to perform the sadhana themselves, they have to learn from someone who have done this and who has knowledge of this particular path that one needs to take. And by learning such sadhana, by learning such path of performing this spiritual sadhana, they will be able to go through the same sadhana also and realize the same supreme consciousness. Yavat sanjayate kinchit sattvam sthavara jangamam. Okay. Let us look at 26. Samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram vinashyatsva vinashyantam yah pashyati sapashyati. So what is the result of going through such sadhana? After going through so many different types of sadhana and finally getting to jnana and coming out from that jnana marga into that brahma vidya, what is the final realization? The final realization is that samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram. This atma swarupam, this supreme consciousness, is omnipresent. It is present everywhere. Right now, we are seeing Bhagavan separately, our body separately, the jagat separately, the jiva separately, the jadam, all the jadapadarthas separately, chetanapadarthas separately, all these differences, the plurality that we have, all that will vanish and one will be able to see the presence of Parameshwara everywhere. So that is the eventual state of the jnani, also called mukta. Vinashyatva vinashyantam yah pashyati sapashyati. Yah pashyati, only that person who is able to see that the presence of Parameshwara, the presence of that Atma Swarupam everywhere, he is the one who is supposed to be having the right vision. Until then, it is all ignorance only. No matter what we think we know, it is all ignorance only, because we do not have that vision of that Atma, Paramatma everywhere. Then, let us look at 31. अनादित्वात् निर्गुणत्वात् परमात्मायमव्ययः शरीरस्थोऽपि कौन्तेय न करोति न लिप्यते. सो इफ् दिस् परमात्मा आत्मस्वरूपम् इस् सपोस् टु बि एव्रिवेर्, वै कान्ट् ऐ सी इट्? वै कान्ट् ऐ सील् इट्? वै इस् इट् सो डिफिकल्ट् टु पर्सीव्? दट् ईस् बिकास् दिस् आत्मस्वरूपम् इट् ईस् इट् डस् नाट् डू एनिथिङ्ग्. इट् ईस् अकार न करोति. इट् डजन्ट् डू एनिथिङ्ग् बिकास् it does not have any karma to do, because this is not a a physical substance. This atma, this is the consciousness principle. Consciousness principle is because of which everything gets done, but it itself, by itself, does not do anything. Only in its presence, everything gets done. That is why Krishna elsewhere says, maya adhyakshena prakriti. In my adhyakshata, in my presence only, prakriti does everything. I don't do anything because I am the witness principle. So similarly, this is sharirasthopi kaunteya, this atma swarupam. Now he is going into the difference between kshetra and kshetrajna. So Arjuna has to understand. So what is kshetra? What is kshetrajna? So he is trying to highlight the properties of this kshetrajna, the atma swarupam. Yatha sarvagatam saukshmyat akasham nopalipyate sarvatravasthito dehe tathatma nopalipyate. Just like how even though the sky is present everywhere, it does not have sangam with anything. It does not get attached with anything. Anything you throw towards the sky does not get attached to the sky. But the sky is present everywhere. So he is giving the most physically appropriate example is the akasham. So akasham is there everywhere. It's not the sky. Akasham actually means space. So space is everywhere, but space doesn't get attached to anything. If you put two walls in space, you can call it a limited space. But if you remove those two walls, it is unlimited space. Similarly, when that atma is present in that particular body, you tend to call that body as a particular, with a particular name and form. But when that body falls, the same atma swarupam is present everywhere. Just like as if you have just removed the walls and the space is just the unlimited space. So similarly, the atma swarupam is only unlimited and it does not have any limits. It is sarvagatam. Then, yatha prakashayatyekaha krishnam lokamim ravihi kshetram kshetri tatha krishnam prakashayati bharata. So what he is saying, another example he is saying here, the sun is only one sun. And because of that one sun, all the living beings on earth, they are getting their energy and they are able to live. So similarly, there is only one Paramatma, one Atma Swarupam, and because of that presence of that one Atma Swarupam only, every living being in this creation is able to become conscious, live that life. But it doesn't mean that every living being within themselves, they have a different soul. It is one undivided Eka Sarva, Ekarupa Ishvaraha or Ekarupa Atma. Sarva Gatam Saukshmyat Krishnam Lokamimam Ravihi. So just like how the single sun is able to sustain the life on this entire planet, similarly, the single Paramatma, single Atma Swarupam, single consciousness principle, existence can only be one. Consciousness can only be one. So there cannot be multiple existences. Because Atma is that existence consciousness principle, the same Atma Swarupam is present in every body. But the differences are coming because with our vision, we are only seeing the plurality because of our ignorance. We are thinking that, okay, if this name and this shape is there, it's a different name. It's a different form. If this name and this form are there, it's a different entity. Similarly, with all the plurality that we are imagining, we are seeing the differences. But in essence, there is only one kshetrajna in all the kshetra. That is the essence that Krishna wants to drive home here. Kshetras may be many, but kshetrajna is one. So the sthula shariams may be many, but atma is only one. So kshetra kshetrajna yoreva mantaram jnana chakshusha bhuta prakriti mokshancha ye vidurianti te param. So this way, if someone is able to understand the difference between this kshetra and kshetrajna. Kshetra is jadam, it gets born because of the prakriti. The vikaram of the prakriti gives rise to the kshetra. But kshetrajna, he neither dies, he neither is born, he is everywhere, he is in the form of existence and consciousness. So that is the main difference that everyone should understand from this particular chapter. That is the point that Krishna is driving. And he is going to take the same concept and extend it into the rest of the chapters. So this is the end of 13th chapter, Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogaha. Questions?
One question, Guru Garu. We just talked about like kshetra. Kshetra is the prakriti and kshetrajna is the atma swarupam.
Yes.
And like and both are anadi. And that right? Or like kshetrajna is the
both are anadi because you cannot really identify when that prakriti got separated from Bhagavan and became a separate entity. That is not possible at all. Prakriti and Purusha were always together. The only solution is for the jiva to be able to develop the knowledge so that the difference, the apparent difference between this prakriti and purusha is completely annihilated in terms of his vision. So if we take the rope snake example, when you are looking at it, the rope appears in the snake. When you are looking at it, the rope appears in the snake. Can you tell when the rope got separated from the snake?
No.
You cannot tell when the rope got separated from the snake. So, that snake was always there, the rope was always there. Because of your erroneous vision, they are looking to be separate. And you are imagining a lot of things, you are going through all this fear and all that. But once the jnanam comes, and that rope vanishes, the snake vanishes, and rope only is there. So, for Maya, there is no beginning, but there is an end. Maya ends in jnanam. Maya and prakriti are the same. The prakriti or Maya, it ends in jnanam. But you cannot identify a beginning because you don't know when that separation happened. Because really, there is no separation at all. Absolutely, there is no separation. But we are imagining that there to be a separation. When there is an imagination of a separation, how can you identify a beginning for that? There is no physical separation.
So it doesn't exist. The separation doesn't exist at all. It is our imagination.
Yeah. And when that imagination occurred, that also you cannot. Because this ajnanam has been there since forever. So there is, you cannot identify a particular pocket of time saying, okay, the jnanam started from this particular point of time. That is not possible. But when the jnanam ends, you can identify. That is why Maya is called anadi, but not anantam. If Maya is anantam, then there is no point of sadhana at all. So Maya ends with jnanam, but there is no beginning that can be identified for Maya. Because only after Maya, this concept of time, space, all this physical universe, all this came. Maya is the mother of the universe. So physical universe came out of Maya. So how can you identify a point of time for Maya to begin? It is not possible. That is why Maya is called Mula, Mula Karanam, or Mula Vidya. So because of which, everything else including our mind, comes into being. So we cannot go beyond that and identify a point of origin for Maya. That is why it is called anadi. Okay, any other questions? Okay, we'll stop here then. Let us do a couple of shlokas of Chaturdashodhyaya. That is the shloka we are talking about, in which, in the last class, did we do one or two classes? I don't remember.
We did one class, Guru.
Okay, one class. So in the one class, I explained
about
the reason for the Shastras to say why the Guru's protection and guidance is essential for the Shishya to navigate this Shastra Jnanam and achieve the ultimate goal of life called Moksha. Because without that guidance and protection from the Guru, the Sadhaka will be completely lost because of all the drawbacks that I talked about in the last class. One is the ignorance of the Shastras. The second is the inability to make the right decision in the right priority order. Whereas for the right pramanams are Veda Pramanam, and then Smriti Pramanam, then Sadachara Pramanam, then finally Atma Pramanam, what we think is right. But most of the time we get confused and make decisions based on all the confused set of priorities. And we don't know what the Shastra actually says. Then we have this weakness called the ego and ignorance that prevent us from making the right decisions and thinking about things in the right way. And then finally, what this Guru is doing is removing the layers of the dirt from our mind and forcing us to think at a much higher level than what we are thinking right now. Because those much higher levels of thinking and understanding are what are constituting the sadhana chitta sampatti. When we talk about viveka, vairagya, mumukshutva, samadhi, shakta sampatti, they are much higher levels of thinking and understanding of the reality. The right level of the understanding of the reality, which we currently don't have. So, the problem being in our mind, us trying to think that with our thinking capacity, our intellectual capacity, our mind, we will be able to overcome that problem without any external guidance and protection, that is a fool's ambition. That is why one always needs the protection and the guidance of the Guru. And we also talked about what that Guru should be like. The three main characteristics of the Guru. What are they?
Shrotriyatva.
Shrotriyatva. Brahmanishtha.
Sampradaya. So he should be a Shrotriya, Brahmanishtha, and Sampradaya. So Shrotriya being well-versed in the Vedas and the related Shastras that are required for the communication of this knowledge. That is the Shrotriya. Brahmanishtha is the practical experience through which he is going through, or that which he has achieved, eventually resulting in that Brahmanubhavam himself, the Guru being a Brahmavit himself. Then the third one is one who knows the right way of teaching, which is called the sampradaya, the right way of teaching. So I gave you, I keep giving you this example of the shastra being the treasure that is locked in a treasure chest, and the only key that can open it is the sampradaya key that can open it. So this sampradaya is also called parampara. So this guru parampara, one who is in the lineage of the gurus. So these three are the most important characteristics of the guru. So I talked a little bit about Brahmanishtha. I'll talk a little bit about Shrotriyatvam. I was going to explain more on this sampradaya, to know more about this sampradaya. Then there were a few questions. If I missed any question, just remind me. If I said I will answer it later, just remind me in this class after we talk about it. So some of the questions were, how do I identify the guru? How do I know who the right guru is? How do I know that this particular guru is right for me? How do I serve the guru in this day and age? Doing the service to the guru, how is it possible? So all those questions came. So we'll try to answer them towards the end. But I will talk about sampradaya to begin with. So what does it mean to be a sampradaya with guru? Sampradaya with. Sampradaya is one word. With, one who knows sampradaya and follows the sampradaya, is a sampradaya with. So that is a sampradaya with guru. So what are the sampradayas that we have? A sampradaya simply means, for example, if we take this Brahma Vidya, what is the main source of knowledge for this Brahma Vidya for us?
Guru Parampara.
No, the Guru Parampara is how we got it, but Vedas are the original source, specifically the Prasthanatrayam. The Prasthanatrayam being the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutras, and the Bhagavad Gita are the three sources of knowledge through which this Brahma Vidya has been communicated by the gurus to us. So this Prasthanatray being the body of knowledge that is there, how come there are so many different sampradayas that came out? If this is the only one set of books, how many sampradayas came out? How does that explain? It simply means that the same mantras of the Upanishads, the same sutras of the Brahma Sutras, and the same shlokas of the Bhagavad Gita have been commented upon by different acharyas with different commentaries. And that gave rise to different sampradayas. So when the commentary is different and the interpretation is different, the following path to reach that ultimate goal is also going to be different. So when the same thing is interpreted in multiple different ways, each of these different ways of interpretation is also going to have a particular process to follow, where that acharya has laid down that particular process to say, okay, this is how it should be interpreted, and with this interpretation, these are the steps. And to achieve these steps and this goal, this is the process to follow. So that interpretation plus the process to follow plus the physical logistics of following that process, the entire thing put together is called one sampradaya. Similarly, if another acharya has interpreted those three texts differently and laid down a different understanding, a different set of goals, and a different set of processes to achieve that goal, that becomes a different sampradaya. So since in our Sanatana Dharma there is no restriction on how many sampradayas we can have, this is a pretty open sampradaya. So we do not restrict anybody to say, okay, in this book this word is like this, so you must stick to it only this way, otherwise no, you will be punished. We do not have that, because our sampradaya, our Sanatana Dharma is based on rational thinking, open debate and open understanding. So with that particular process, that gave rise to different types of sampradayas. There are so many different types of sampradayas to follow, but if you really, really, really distill them together, there are only two or three different sampradayas. In fact, if you even distill it further, there are only two sampradayas. One can be called a Dvaita Sampradaya, the other one is called the Advaita Sampradaya. There is also a Vishishta Advaita Sampradaya, but largely it comes under Dvaita Sampradaya only, because when I spoke about this Vedanta Shastra, what are the three entities that I said Vedanta Shastra talks about? What are the three primary entities that Vedanta talks about?
Jiva, Atma,
Jagat, Ishvara.
Jiva, Jagat, Ishvara, correct. So Jiva, Jagat and Ishvara. So all these sampradayas, what they are doing is defining who is Jiva, what is Jagat, who is Ishvara, what is the relationship between Jiva, Ishvara and Jagat. That is where the difference is starting from. So Advaita Sampradaya is essentially saying that this Ishvara or Brahman is Nitya Vastu, also called Atma, this is Nitya Vastu. Then Jagat and Ishvara, Jagat and the Jiva are the Abhasa of that Atma, which are the imaginary entities. The imaginary entities are the Mithya entities, the Jiva and Jagat, will have to overcome their ignorance and realize that in reality there is nothing else other than that Brahma Vastu, that Atma Vastu or Ishvara, also called Nitya Vastu. So that Nitya Vastu is always there. This Anitya Vastu called Jiva and Jagat, they came out of it, apparently came out of it because of this imagination called Maya. So when that Maya is overcome, then there won't be any more Jiva, any more Jagat, only Brahman will remain, only Ishvara will remain. So the entire sadhana is for the removal of this ajnana, ignorance, and realization that everything is Brahman, sarvam kalvidam brahma. So also called Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya Jivo Brahmaiva Naparaha. That is the Advaita interpretation. And where did this Advaita interpretation start? Did somebody just come in and start doing this Advaita interpretation? Did Shankaracharya come in and start doing Advaita interpretation? No. This Advaita interpretation is in the Vedas themselves. Vedas have so many statements that say Brahma alone, Brahman alone is the Nitya Vastu. That is why this Mahavakyas, when I talked about the Mahavakyas, these Mahavakyas came into being. So Veda itself says Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. So Veda also says Nasadasi Nasadasi. So all these statements that are within the Veda, they are saying Advaita is truth. Now if we take the other side of it, there is a Dvaitam. If you finely slice it, there is a Dvaitam, there is Vishishta Advaitam, there is Dvaita Advaitam, there is Achintya Bheda Bhedam, there is Shiva Advaitam, there is Vaishnava Shiva Vishishta Advaitam, Vaishnava Vishishta Advaitam. All these fine divisions are there. but they all can be bunched into one entity called Dvaitam. Why? Because they all say Ishvara is real, Ishvara is separate. Jagat is real, Jagat is separate. Jiva is real, Jiva is separate. Which is what we see in our day-to-day life also. So, just because we see them in our day-to-day life, and also there are some Vedic statements that support this particular way of interpretation, all of those schools interpret that Ishvara is separate, Jagat is separate, Jiva is separate. Some of them say Jagat and Ishvara are Amshas of Jagat and Jiva are Amshas of Ishvara. Some others say Ishvara is completely separate. There are minute differences in interpretation, but largely no one in those schools says that you are none other than Ishvara. The Jiva and Ishvara are one and the same. Nobody says that. Only Advaita says that. Advaitam. Advaitam means two. Advaitam means no two. So there are no two entities in Advaitam. Finally, there is only one entity called Brahman or Atma. But in other schools, there are multiple entities. Bhagavan is separately there. Shivjiva is separately there. Jagat is separately there. And that Bhagavan in most of the schools is given some gunas, given a name, given a form. In Vaishnava Vishishta Advaitam, he is called Narayana. In Shaiva Vishishta Advaitam, he is called Shiva. In Achintya Veda Vedavadam, he is called Krishna. He is a Golokavasi. In Ganapatyam, he is called Ganapati. In Kaumaram, he is called Kumara. So all these Dvaita schools, they give an interpretation that Ishvara has a name and a form and a place where he stays, and this Jiva has to do this bhakti and upasana and eventually has to reach that place where Ishvara resides, and that is called Moksha Mukti. Advaita says all that is fine. All that is fine. I agree with you that bhakti is there, karma is there, upasana is there, japa is there, all these things are there. That will give you one type of mukti called Saguna Sakara Mukti. That will be there, but there is something beyond that. Why? Because again, if we go back to the Veda, there are so many statements in the Veda itself that say that particular mukti that you achieve by going to a Saguna Sakara place is not going to be permanent. Abrahma Bhuvanal Lokat, Abrahma Bhuvanal Lokaha Punaravartin Arjuna, Krishna says. From Brahma Lokam all the way to the Patal Lokam, everything is Punaravartinaha. They go again back into annihilation and back into creation. Back into annihilation, back into creation. Maybe the time is a little bit different. Maybe this will take a few million years to get annihilated. The other one might take a few billion years to get annihilated. But everything goes through this cycle of annihilation and creation. So what you call as this Saguna Sakara Moksham is not permanent moksham. It is only a temporary moksham. If you want to really achieve permanent moksham, you have to go beyond that Saguna Sakara Upasana and go to this path called Jnana Marga into that Nirguna Nirakara Upasana or also Jnana Marga and achieve what is called Jivan Mukti. So where all the other schools stop, Advaita starts from there. But the speciality of Advaita is that Advaita does not oppose any of those schools. Does not oppose any of those schools. Do you want to pray to Mahavishnu? Happily pray. You want to pray to Ganapati? Happily pray. You want to pray to Durga? Pray to Durga? You happily pray. You want to pray to Subramanya Swami? Happily pray. You do all that. But realize until where you can go with that upasana. And from there, where you have to go beyond that. So Advaita is like a superset that incorporates every other school of thought into it. But if you take the Dvaita, one of the Dvaita schools, they will not be able to incorporate Advaita into it, because they are stopping short of where Advaita is thinking and Advaita is interpreting the scriptures. That is why for most of those schools, they have an opposition with Advaita. These Advaitins are called Mayavadins by them. These Mayavadis, they call them. So all the Dvaita schools, they have a strong, vehement opposition with Advaita. If you look at some of the commentaries of the Dvaita schools, they are nothing short of abuse in terms of how they criticize Advaita. But Advaita has no problem. If you want to follow bhakti, follow. If you want to follow yoga, you follow. If you want to follow upasana, you follow. Until you realize what purpose they serve. Until you realize what purpose they serve, then once that purpose is served, then you can safely leave them. And then once you achieve the required qualification, go to Jnana Marga and from there come to Nirguna Moksha. So Advaita really starts where the other schools stop. So these are the two basic sampradayas that we have. One is the Advaita sampradayam, the other is the Dvaita sampradayam, be it any school of thought. These are the two main sampradayas that we have. So for all practical purposes, which sampradaya we follow doesn't really matter. Doesn't really matter as long as we understand what these sampradayas are, what their purpose is, what their ultimate goal is, and where they are leading us. And it is also not advisable by the Shastras and also by all the Purvacharyas. They say that it is not advisable for us to go and choose our sampradaya ourselves. Because I told you so many limitations of the human mind earlier. Human mind suffers from so many drawbacks. It is not all-knowing. It does not have the advantage of knowing everything that happened throughout the history. It cannot make a 100% unbiased decision. We always suffer from our vasanas, our tendencies, our idiosyncrasies of the mind. So many drawbacks we have. We have ragadveshas. All those things will affect our decision-making ability. So what Acharyas and the Shastras say is, don't try to choose a sampradaya, because Bhagavan knows which sampradaya to put you into, because he knows what your path of evolution is. If your path of evolution is such that you will benefit from such a sampradaya, then he will put you into one particular sampradaya. Just to follow that sampradaya. Until a point where Bhagavan also decides and sends you the right guru into your life. And then that guru will teach you which path to follow. Now, this should answer the question of how do I choose my guru? How do I choose my guru? So, if we think that we can choose the guru, then that is a problem, because what is the guru doing essentially? In the earlier explanation I gave, what is the guru doing? The guru is removing some of the
ignorance,
impurities that are in our mind and vastly improving our thinking to a much higher level than we are capable right now. So, by definition, guru is already at that level. by definition, guru is already at that level where you have not even thought about. So in terms of spiritual evolution, if we are in, you know, let us say kindergarten or first standard, the guru is already in master's or PhD. And if we think that we can go and examine that guru and decide whether that guru is right for me or not, is it logically possible for us to examine such guru and say whether he is the right person to drive and help me evolve to that level of which I have no idea about?
No.
This is the irony in that question. If I want to choose a guru who can help me, then I need to be able to evaluate that person and decide whether that person can help me or not. Let me give you an example. If I give you three apples and say, choose between three apples, which one is best for you, you may be able to do it relatively easily because you have tasted these apples before. One is green, one is red, one is yellow. You know the green ones are sour, red ones are sweeter, yellow ones are, you know, sort of neutral. All those things you know about these three apples. So you will be able to choose one apple wisely. But if I put three nuclear warheads in front of you and tell you, okay, what is the best nuclear warhead? How will you choose? Because you have no idea how a nuclear warhead works. What are the intricacies in that nuclear warhead? What are the features of the nuclear warhead? What goes into its construction? What are the benefits? What are the drawbacks of each? You have absolutely no idea. Then with what level of confidence can you go and say, this is the right one? This is the best choice. It is impossible. Why? Because you have absolutely no idea what that stuff is. So similarly, if we think that we can go and choose our guru based on some sort of a criteria, like these dating sites. Now, there is a 40-point criteria. If there is a 30-point match, you are compatible. You can go ahead. So like that, if you can think that there is some kind of a criteria to define the guru, it is not possible because he, by definition, is at so much higher level than what you are capable of thinking right now to be able to even think that you can understand what that guru is thinking and how that guru is and evaluate that guru is impossible. There is only one person who can evaluate that guru. Who is that?
Guru's guru.
Guru's guru. Yes, absolutely. So his guru is that. That is why in the Guru Stotram we say Guru Kara Kamala Sanjata. Guru Kara Kamala Sanjata. He is born out of the Kara Kamalam of that previous guru because he is the one who has trained him. He is the one who has seen through this particular person's struggles and whether he is coming out successfully. And he is the only one that can decide whether this person can go and help others or not. So it is the guru's job to decide whether that person can be a guru. It is not the shishya's job or the sadhaka's job to decide whether this person can be a guru or not. Whether this person can be the right guru for me or not, how can we know? Because we don't even know what to ask from the guru. If we don't even know what to ask from the guru, how do we even know whether this is the right guru or not? So what is the solution? How do we know that, you know, we come across so many people. How can we know that one of them is our guru? we come across so many so-called knowledgeable people, so many people who are giving all these, you know, bhashans. Everybody seems nice. Everybody seems knowledgeable. Everybody seems, you know, very evolved. How do I know whether this person is my guru or not? Or whether this person can even be a guru or not? How do we know that? It is very, very difficult. There is someone asking a question. Okay. But there has to be some criteria where I know that this person is the right person to lead me. What are the three characteristics that I said the guru must have?
Shrotriyatvam, Brahmanishtatvam.
Shrotriyatvam, Brahmanishta, and Sampradayavita. Now let us take Brahmanishta. Brahmanishta is the abiding in the knowledge of Brahman. Abiding in the knowledge of Brahman or abiding in the experience of Brahman. Anyone who is in the Gurusthanam, are they going to advertise themselves that, okay, I have achieved this Brahmanishta, I got this certificate that I have Brahmanishta, and so now you can trust me, and now you can train with me, and I also make you a Brahmanishta? No. No guru is going to do that, because guru's purpose is not advertising. What is the guru looking for? Guru is looking for anybody who is passionate enough, desperate enough to come and learn from him. One who is desperate enough to come and learn. The guru is not looking for scholarship. The guru is not looking for knowledge. The guru is not looking for knowledge of the shastras. The guru is not looking for anything. The guru is not looking for social status. The guru is not looking for money. He is not looking for anything. What is the only thing he is looking for? That desperate passion to come and learn. So when the guru is looking for the desperate passion for somebody to come and learn, why he is looking for that desperate passion to come and learn? Because he knows the value of that teaching. That teaching that has been given so compassionately by his guru and so dramatically changed his own life, and as instructed by his guru, he is now looking for a satpatram to give that dhanam to. In return, what is he expecting from that sadhaka? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Everything I have, I am ready to give, the guru says, only if you show that desperate passion. That is why Arjuna says the things that he says, Shishyasteham Shadhimam Tvam Prapannam. I am your Prapanna. Shadhi. Shadhi means give Shasanam. You please give Shasanam, I am ready to listen. That is what the guru is looking for. So when the guru is looking for that, why will he be interested in showing off any of the qualifications? Absolutely no interest at all on the part of the guru to show any qualifications. That too, especially the Brahmanishta qualification. Brahmanishtatvam is something that is internalized in the person. You cannot see anybody and say whether he is a Brahmanishta or not. There could be Brahmanishtas who are roaming around in this society. There are so many Brahmanishtas who have roamed around in the society. Society did not recognize it. And they do not care to announce to the society that they are Brahmanishtas. So, Brahmanishtatvam is something that is absolutely not possible to detect in a guru. Then next, we'll take Shrotriyatvam, the knowledge of the Shastra. This is a little easier. to see. A little easier to see. Why? Because if one has the knowledge of the shastras, when that person is teaching, it shows. Because the teaching has to not only depend on one's experience, but it has to follow what the teaching of the shastras is. This is what the Vedas say. This is what the shastras say. This is what the Smriti says. This is what the Bhagavad Gita says. This is what the Brahma Sutra says. Why? Because that confidence has to come in the sadhaka, that he is not just pulling things out of his mind. So for that confidence to come, the guru should give examples from the shastra. So that Shrotriyatvam is a little easier, but again the same problem comes. The Shishya has pretty much no idea about what is said in the shastras. Absolutely no idea. So even if you have a little idea, then you may be able to say, okay, what this person is making, okay, I have heard that particular sentence from the Vedas, I have heard this particular sentence. So there is a little bit of possibility for us to identify whether a particular guru is a Shrotriya guru or not. So Brahmanishta guru, absolutely not possible. Shrotriya guru, maybe somewhat possible. But what should be much easier to identify is whether the guru is sampradayavit or not. Much easier. Why? Because this identification of the sampradayam is not rocket science. If we ourselves are equipped with a little bit of understanding of what sampradayas are, what is a sampradaya, what is a satsampradaya, then we will be able to definitely see what this guru sampradaya is, what sampradaya he is coming from, what guru parampara he is coming from, and what guru parampara he is talking about. All that we should be able to see. And then we will be able to know, okay, so this is the sampradaya of the guru, this is the parampara of the guru, this is what the guru is talking about. Okay, so he is not always saying, because I am saying so, you should look into it. Because I am saying so, you should listen to it. This is what I thought about. This is what I figured out. He is not saying that. Guru, the sampradaya with guru is always saying, this is what our acharyas have been saying. This is what our shastras have been saying. This is what our sampradaya says. This is what our parampara says. So that is a relatively easier thing to identify. So out of the three characteristics of the guru, if a shishya has to or a sadhaka has to go and approach the guru, one can not evaluate at all whether one is a Brahmanishta guru or not. One can maybe somehow within time and experience spending some time and learning from the guru, one will be able to know whether he is a Shrotriya guru or not. But easier than that is identifying whether one is a sampradayavit guru or not. This is the only way to identify the guru. But even with those levels of identification, whether the sadhaka will be able to decide whether this is the right guru for me or not, shastra says no. Neither it is your job to decide whether it is the right guru for you, nor it is your capability to decide whether it is the right guru for you. So when you are in that particular state, then how do I know whether this person is my guru or not? That is when you depend on Bhagavan. That is when you depend on Bhagavan. All our acharyas say three things happen only because of Bhagavat Karunyam, Bhagavan's Kripa. Manushyatvam, Mumukshatvam, Mahavrishasam Samshraya, Daivanugraha Hetukam, Trayameva. Only when Sampurna Daivanugraham is there, first we will get Manushyatvam. Then second we will get Mumukshatvam. Mumukshatvam means at least some cursory interest in this shastra, in learning and following the sampradaya. Then finally, when Bhagavan is really pleased with our upasana, really pleased with the sadhana that we did so far, that right guru will just walk into our life. When we talked about the faculties of the mind in Tattva Bodha, I told you that there are two things operating on the mind always. One is prarabdha, the other is free will. Prarabdha is what is happening to you. Free will is what you want to do out of what is happening to you. So what is happening around you is prarabdha. What you want to do, what decision you want to make out of it is your free will. So if you want to use your free will to decide on whether this guru is right for me or not, there is not enough information for you, enough capacity for you to use your free will to decide. But where can you use your free will? Because that guru has been given to you by prarabdha, by daivam, by Bhagavat Karunyam, that guru has come. This is where we can use our free will. Once that guru is there, we must use our free will and decide that, okay, now that this bumper lottery has been given to me by Bhagavan, should I waste the rest of my life just going about, or should I take this opportunity and get the best out of the life? So that is where that free will has to be used. So we should not be too much worried about whether this particular person is the right guru or not, whether I can get the right guru or not. Why? Because we are in kindergarten right now. And you are worried about whether somebody is a single PhD or a double PhD. Why are we worried? You don't need to be worried. As long as that guru is a sampradaya with guru, and is a Shrotriya guru, and of course you do not know whether that is the Brahmanishta guru or not. His guru knows what the qualification of that guru is. Then absolutely that is why will Bhagavan put that person in my life? That is the greatest fortune that I have. So without doing the sampradaya bhangam, if we can go and approach that guru and learn from him, because that is the greatest opportunity Bhagavan is just placing right in front of us. And why that opportunity to go into Jnana Marga is placed? When all the sadhana that we have done, all the upasana that we have done so far has given fruit, the result is the appearance of the guru who will lead us in the Jnana Marga. If we are ignoring that and you want to go back to what we have been doing, then Bhagavan will say, okay, up to you. The rest of your prarabdha will take you. So there, do we want to use our prarabdha or our free will and completely follow the guru? That is up to us. But in terms of evaluating the guru, we have neither the capability nor the position to evaluate. There are two other forces who are deciding whether that guru should appear to us or not. That is the guru's guru and Bhagavan, whose grace is acting, and they are the ones who are deciding. This is what the Shastra says. But if any of us, we want to make a decision ourselves, there is nothing to stop. There is nothing to stop in ourselves. In our sampradaya, to make any decision, you are free to do it. Unlike other sampradayas, where if you make a decision, there is an authority that is going to issue some kind of a decree on you, and you are excommunicated. We don't have that. You are free to make any choice that you have, as long as you understand that every choice has a consequence. That is what our sampradaya is. That is the karma siddhanta. Every little choice that you make has a consequence. Do you want to make the right choice? You will get the right consequence. If you don't want to make the right choice, nobody is stopping you. absolutely go ahead and make whatever choice you want. But the guidance will be given. Here is how you should be making choices. The priority order is this. This is the process. This is the way to think about it. This is how these things work. All that information is given. Now the final decision is ours. So that is how this sampradaya, Shrotriyatvam and Brahmanishtatvam work together in bringing the Guru to us. And once that Guru comes to us in our life, once again I am telling you, why is that Guru ready to give all the knowledge? What is he expecting in return?
Nothing. The passion. He has the passion to give the knowledge.
Yeah, he is passionate about giving the knowledge. He is looking for that sadhaka being desperate to receive that knowledge. Why? The sadhaka must feel that pain. I need someone to save me. So that is the pain that he must feel. So you know the story of Vivekananda and Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, right? Where Vivekananda keeps asking, how do I see God? How do I see God? Then when they are passing next to a pond, Ramakrishna takes Vivekananda by the head and immerses him into the pond. And after a minute, he takes him out and says, how did you feel? I felt like I was dying. I felt like if I don't take another breath, I'm going to die. And Ramakrishna says, if that is how you feel about Bhagavan, you will see Bhagavan. Similarly, if that is how you feel about learning, you will learn. Guru will give. Until then, it is just a normal transaction. So that is the passion that Guru is looking for. Why? Because he knows what is the value of this. He knows the value of this. No amount of million-dollar lotteries in our life is going to be equal to this Jnana Ratnam that he is holding. And he is only looking for someone who is passionate and desperate enough to take that and evolve their life. So, that being the case, so asking such questions as to, you know, how I can choose my Guru, in our Shastra, they don't make sense. But from a practical point of view, yeah, you have to think about if there are four or five people, you know, talking about so many things, you have to decide which one will work for me. And this is the framework that Shastra gives. Who is a Sampradaya with Guru? Who is teaching in the right Sampradaya? What is the risk of going with the Guru in the wrong Sampradaya? The risk of going with the Guru in the wrong Sampradaya, the Upanishad itself says, Andhe naiva niyamana yadhandha. It is like blind leading the blind. If you don't learn from the right Sampradaya with Guru, it is like the blind leading the blind. You will end up somewhere. He doesn't know where you are ending up, and you don't know where you are ending up. So that is why this sampradaya is extremely important. And that is the reason why Bhagavan gave you a particular sampradaya. So that
Guru Garu, one question and Nikada. We don't know that Kadande because Bhagavan decides the Guru, right? Bhagavan decides the Guru. Guru comes along right with his sampradaya. So how can, you know, it will be wrong, whatever sampradaya is picked?
That's a very good question. Very good question. Guru comes with his own sampradaya. But there are so many people who come into our life who are teachers. Who are teachers for us. We can learn so many things from them. So they are all called acharyas. This is different from the Acharya word that we normally use in the Guru Parampara. So Acharya means one who teaches, or Upadhyaya you can say. But a Guru is someone with whom you have a personal connection. A Guru is one with whom you can eventually say, Tvameva Mata Chapita Tvameva Tvameva Bandhuscha Sakhatvameva Tvameva Vidya Dravinam Tvameva Tvameva Sarvam Mama Deva Deva. So, if that person is someone with whom there is a soul-to-soul connection, that is the Guru. So I am not talking about so many people coming with their own, their own sampradaya or their own teaching and trying to teach things or trying to preach things. Preaching and teaching are different. So many people can preach things. So you open YouTube, there are so many preachings that are there. If you go to an event, somebody will be preaching something. So all these preachings are different. A teaching is something that is long-term, that is systematic, that is in the right purport of the Vedas. When that person appears in your life, there is a connection that happens eventually. Because eventually the Shishya will have to realize that soul-to-soul connection, because this vidya is not something that can be conveyed in words. Although all the explanations can be conveyed, but the eventual teaching of the Mahavakyams, of the Advaita Jnanam, has to happen soul-to-soul. So I am talking about that Guru. When that Guru happens in the life, then one does not need to worry about Sampradaya at all. We can safely ignore whatever Sampradaya we have been in. Bhagavan sent that Guru to us. We just fall at the feet of that Guru and just follow what that Guru is saying. Because at that point, what is really this Sampradaya for? This Sampradaya is eventually for realizing our own Swarupam and realizing Bhagavan. And the Sampradaya is also the modus operandi of things to do. How do we do things is the Sampradaya. But when the Guru comes to teach Jnana Margam to you, Bhagavan is already indicating that whatever Upasana, whatever Bhakti, all that you did, they have already given fruit to you. The result of that fruit is this Guru that is coming in front of you. At that point, you don't need to worry. You don't need to worry about the Sampradaya. Just surrender it to that Guru. The Guru will take care of. At that point, Sampradaya actually does not even make any sense. Because the only thing left at that point is Jnana.
Sir.
And Jnana will be given to you. When you are talking about gurus who are going to teach you things or preach you things, okay, this puja has to be done that way. No, this thing has to be done this way. So those are the practical modus operandi of things. Then we have to look at sampradaya. Okay, is my sampradaya matching with that person's sampradaya? But when it comes to jnanam, absolutely no need, because that is the Paramaguru that is coming into our life. This is not the ordinary Guru that is going to sort of preach us something. This is the Paramaguru who is going to simply lift us up from this level of ignorance and is going to give us the ultimate knowledge. Because such opportunities do not come often. I told you earlier classes, what is the rare chance that we get this human birth? That itself is very rare. Out of this human birth, being in the Sanatana Dharma itself, again very rare. Being in Sanatana Dharma having an interest in this path, even rarer. Having an interest in this path and Bhagavan deciding that you should be guided by someone who can make you cross the ocean of samsara, even rarer. And when that guru is there, one deciding to actually follow that guru, because even if guru is available, again our free will and our prarabdha, our vasanas, they're all acting on our mind, and there's no need to follow the guru. And once that saranagati is done, jnanam is given, only then. So imagine the compounding effect of how rare this opportunity is. So if you compound all these odds, the odds are like, you know, a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent. So that is what we have to think about. So you are right. When that right guru walks into our life, at that point, the only thing is surrendering to that guru and listening to what the guru says. Actually, one of these days I will explain, or I will describe how I met my own guru. That will be a very interesting episode for you to hear.
Yeah, definitely we want to hear that and see.
So, Guru Garu, question here. So, at that point, once you find the guru, the guru sampradayam will become yours then? Can we say that?
Yes, absolutely. There are two kinds of sampradaya. There are two kinds of sampradaya. So even in Sanatana Dharma, there are two kinds of sampradaya. One is called the Vamsha Sampradaya. Vamsha Sampradaya means what we have been following in our family. Then the second is called Guru Sampradaya. What my guru is following. Again, I'm not talking about any guru here. I'm talking about the Brahma Vidya Guru. The Brahma Vidya Guru, who is the Parama Guru, who is going to lead us into moksha. So, Vamsha Sampradayam can be followed for everything else. But once that Sharanagati is done to the Jnana Guru, to the Brahma Vidya Guru, then Vamsha Sampradayam takes a second seat. Guru Sampradayam takes a higher seat. That is why Pravara also, when we talk about this Rishi Pravara and all, there is a Vamsha Pravara. So what Vamsham we have been born into. So that Vamsha Pravara only we will be normally taking. But in certain cases, when that person has completely surrendered to the Guru, he will leave the Vamsha Pravara and take the Guru Pravara. From then on, he will be identified only in the lineage of the Guru, not necessarily in the lineage of the Vamsham. For that, you know, so much punyam one should do. So when we say Narayanam Padmabhuvam Vasishtam Shaktincha Tatputra Parasharancha Vyasam Sukam Gaudapadam Mahantam Govinda Yogindram Athasya Shisham Sri Shankaracharyam Athasya Padmapadamcha Hastamalakancha Shisham Tam Totakam Vartikakaram Anyan Asmad Gurum Santatamana Tosmi. When we say that, this is not the Vamsha Parampara we are talking about. This is the Guru Parampara we are talking about. So that is why all the Acharyas that come in that parampara, their only identification is, I am the Shishya of such and such an Acharya. That's it. I have no other identification.
So logically, an Acharya's pravara would be the Guru pravara only, not the family's pravara.
Not the family's pravara. But at that point, we are, you know, you are talking about jnanam. So in that, you are beyond all the rituals, you are beyond all the upasana, you are all beyond the japam, you know, all these things. You are into jnanamarga. At that jnanamarga, you are hardly bothered about what pravara I say, what sankalpam I say, what are the, all these things you are not really bothered about. Your only passion in life is sadhana chitushtayam jnanam. Sadhana chitushtayam jnanam, then moksha. That's it.
Moksha. Okay.
until then all these things will matter. So
Guru Varam,
it is important to follow the family pravara, family sampradaya, but in the case of that Parama Guru, Brahma Vidya Guru, everything will take a second seat, because such an opportunity Bhagavan may never give again. That is the conclusion. Okay. So
one basic question, Guru Garu. In this, like we talked about all the things like Guru and all the stuff, with the ignorance of the student,
uh-huh.
Some might not even identify the person coming into your life as uh-huh. a guru,
uh-huh.
and like that is the ignorance of the person. How do we? That is a free will we talked about. When that comes in,
there is no answer for that. There is no answer for that. The only thing we can do is pray to Bhagavan every day that when the guru comes, I have the right frame of mind to not turn away.
You say Bhagavan's grace wasn't there, enough grace,
yeah.
Is not.
See, Bhagavan's grace also works at so many levels, right? When a little grace is there, that person comes in. When more grace is there, you know, you are actually, you know, identifying that guru. Then, you know, when sampurna anugraham is there, like all our acharyas, how, you know, Bharati Tirtha Swami went all the way from Guntur to Ujjain without even telling anybody in the house. He just took the train, went to Ujjain, fell at the feet of Abhinavidyaditya Swami and said, "That is it. I am done. I am at your feet. I am not going anywhere. You cannot send me anywhere. I have no other place to go." That's it. From then on, he just stayed with me.
Sometimes it may take birth after birth also to get the real good one.
I cannot hear you properly.
His question is, sometimes it takes births after births to get to the real guru.
Absolutely. Millions of births. It depends on how much our sadhana is paripakva.
Okay,
so some of the questions I may have answered in this session. If anybody has any other questions, you can either send me or put it in the WhatsApp or ask me. So if there are any other quick questions, maybe a couple of minutes we can finish.
One thing we didn't talk is the qualities of the Shishya is something we talked about, and we said like we'll come to that later, but I don't know whether this is the time or not, but just that's one thing we basically.
I will do it in a probably a dedicated session.
Okay.
Because it will probably take a little bit of time to talk about.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions from anybody? Okay, so with this, we'll complete the shloka. So I think by now you are all able to really understand the import of why in that one particular sentence, why Acharya is saying, Sri Jagati Sajjana Sangati Rekha Bhavati Bhavarnava Taraniya Nauka. There is only one nauka, one boat, one ship available to cross this ocean. That is this Guru Sangati,
Guru
Sajjana Sangati,
Guru
Sangatyam. So why Acharya is saying, see, when Mahatmas like that say something, there is so much meaning they impregnate into that word. It is no less than an Upanishad for us. So it is very, very important to understand. And when we just read that Stotram, Bhajagovinda Stotram, in a printed book, we may not be able to understand what that actually means. We, you know, somebody gives maybe a word-to-word English meaning in, you know, five sentences. We just read it and go through it. So that is why such understanding and explanation is necessary, because only then we will really know what Acharya is meaning by this sentence. So with this, that verse we will complete, and rest of the sutram we'll pick up from next week. Okay. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnamidam Purnamudachyate Purnamasya Purnamadayam Purnamadayam Purnamadihyate
ृक्षो नम हरि ओम
थैंक यू गुरुजी
नमस्कार गुरुगारु
नमस्कार गुरुगारु
नमस्कार
नमस्कार गुरुजी थैंक यू नमस्कार